karmana. Satya dayo dvyashti sahasra yoshitaha. Nirjitya sankhye tridashams tarashisho. Haranti vajrayuda balavochitaha. After reading the word by word meaning, it kind of strikes me here. We say dvyashta sahasra yoshitaha. Prabhupada translates yoshitaha also as enjoyable. So it's 16,000 enjoyables. That's a lot. Must be God. Simply by administering comforts at the lotus feet of the Lord, which is the most important of all services, the queens at Dwarka, headed by Satyabhama, induced the Lord to conquer the demigods. Yeah. Thus the queens enjoy things which are prerogatives of the wives of the controller of the thunderbolts. So this is Yudhisthira talking. No? Yeah. So describing the situation of Krishna and his associates. And of course, he's in this whole contemplation of Krishna and Lila Smaranam, and hoping that his almost for sure speculation that Krishna has left the planet is not true, like that hope against hope. Yeah. And he's meditating on his associates of Krishna. And the purport, I think Prabhupada talks about serving the lotus feet, because here it's talking about how these ladies, they weren't great heroes in the battlefield. They didn't grow long beards and long fingernails and sit in the forest and just do austerities, But they simply were like cooking chapatis and whatever, puris and sabji, alava and chutney for Krishna. And whatever simple things that Krishna wanted, whatever the most simple, humble service that Krishna wanted, like that. Yeah? But that was so incredible that just by doing this, they were able to surpass the position of Indra. And of course, to become Indra, we hear you have to do 100 horse sacrifices. Wow. And so it's amazing that serving the deity or something like that, one can accomplish so many things. So the purport is mostly about, I think, Satyabhama. It's interesting always thinking, what's Prabhupada going to talk about here? And I think he talks about Satyabhama and also this fact about devotional service and its potency, like that. So beginning a nice biography about Satyabhama. One of the principal queens of Lord Shri Krishna at Dwarka. After killing Narakasura, Lord Krishna visited the palace of Narakasura accompanied by Satyabhama. He went to Indraloka also with Satyabhama, and she was received by Shachi Devi, who introduced her to the mother of the demigods. Excuse me. Wow. Aditi. Aditi was very much pleased with Satyabhama, and she blessed her with the benediction of permanent youth as long as Lord Krishna remained on the earth. Aditi also took her with her to show her some of the special prerogatives of the demigods in the heavenly planets. When Satyabhama saw the Parijat flower, she desired to have it in her palace at Dwarka. After that, she came back to Dwarka along with her husband and expressed her willingness to have the Parijata flower in the palace, at her palace. I think it's kind of sweet. She didn't tell Krishna she wanted the Parijata flower, but she told him that she wouldn't mind having it, it sounds like. I wouldn't mind having that. Very nice. Satyabhama's palace was especially bedecked with valuable jewels. And even in the hottest season of the summer, the inside of the palace remained cool, as if air-conditioned. But I understand Papa was doing research on all of this in the library, and maybe like Vedic Encyclopedia or something like that. But because I don't know where these sources come from. Maybe Mahabharata or even like the Puranic Encyclopedias. Of course, in Padma Purana or Skanda Purana or Vishnu Purana, we might also find these stories about Krishna's pastimes and the different queens. She decorated her palace with various flags, heralding the news of her great husband's presence there. Once, along with her husband, she met Draupadi, and she was anxious to be instructed by Draupadi in the ways and means of pleasing her husband. Maybe later on somebody can tell us where this is. I was thinking maybe it's at the story of Kurukshetra when they all met. I didn't have a chance to look up that. Draupadi was expert in this affair because she kept five husbands, the Pandavas, and all are very much pleased with her. Versus the joke about the man who found the genie, the lamp on the beach in Los Angeles. And the genie said, what do you want? He said, well, I want to go to Hawaii, but it makes me sick to fly and go on boats. Can you build a highway? And the genie said, well, that's too much work. Got so much cement, everything else, pylons. Think of something else. And the man said, well, I've been married for 7 years, and I've never been able to make my wife pleased with me. Can you figure out some way to make my wife happy with me? And the genie was thinking about it, and he said, now, how many lanes did you want on that highway? Yeah. But Draupadi was able to keep five husbands happy with her. They liked her. Yeah. On receipt of Draupadi's instructions, she was very much pleased and offered her good wishes and returned to Dwarka. She was the daughter of Satrajit. After the departure of Lord Krishna, when Arjuna visited Dwarka, all the queens, including Satyabhama and Rukmini, lamented for the Lord with great feeling. At the last stage of her life, she left for the forest to undergo severe penance. Satyabhama instigated her husband to get the Parijat flower from the heavenly planets, and the Lord got it even by force from the demigods, as a common husband secures things to please his wife. As already explained, the Lord had very little to do with so many wives to carry out their orders like an ordinary man. But because the queens accepted the high quality of devotional service, namely administering the Lord all comforts, the Lord played the part of a faithful and complete husband. No earthly creature can expect to have things from the heavenly kingdom, especially the Parijata flowers, which are simply to be used by the demigods. But due to their becoming the Lord's faithful wives, all of them enjoyed the special prerogatives of the great wives of the denizens of heaven. In other words, since the Lord is the proprietor of everything within his creation, it is not very astonishing for the queens of Dwarka to have any rare thing from any part of the universe. When was it? Goridas Pandit Das said he was fanning Prabhupada. I think it was in Bombay. Prabhupada was giving class in the morning. And Goridas said there was one nice flower bush, fragrant flower bush, outside the temple someplace. And so he brought a flower, and before he started fanning Prabhupada with a chamara, when he came to sit for the morning program, the class, he offered him this flower. He said Prabhupada kept smelling it all during the lecture from time to time. So he brought another one the next day, and Prabhupada was appreciating it. And then the third day he didn't bring it. Maybe he was too busy or something. And so Prabhupada just kind of smiled and motioned to him, like with his hand, like, where's the flower? You know, like he went and got one and brought it like that. And Prabhupada was talking about how different flowers adjust the, you know, the prana and the body and so on. And of course, we have all this, you know, things about aromatherapy. And so some people, I think, are more sensitive to this than other people. But in general, our culture is so gross. You know, we don't appreciate these subtle kinds of things. But this is the subtle kinds of pleasures, which are far greater than the gross pleasures that mostly we Western people enjoy. I've heard that Prabhupada one time was asking devotees when they came out of a feast at some Maharaj's palace or some big fellow, what they thought of the feast. And devotees were making some comments. And Prabhupada was laughing. He said, you Western people can only taste, it was for five things, sweet, salty, sour, burned, and burned. Something like that. So on, you know. So, you know, and also Tre Rishi told a story. He told us that when Prabhupada came to Iran, they had very nice accommodations because he was there as a representative for a big business. They had like a nice piece of land, maybe like 2 acres, 1 acre. It was an old nice house, and so they could accommodate Prabhupada very nicely. And many people were coming. Mother, I guess it was Manjari, she made some very nice sandesh, you know, for the evening program. And Atreya, Rishi said, Prabhupada gave like one piece to everybody, and then Prabhupada took a piece, and he was talking, you know. And everybody ate their sandesh, you know. And Prabhupada was just broke off a little chip off of his and was taking it and, you know, relishing it. Then a little bit later during the lecture, he gave some more sandesh to everybody. And Atreya Rishi noticed that it was like everybody else had eaten maybe four pieces of sandesh. And Prabhupada wasn't even finished with the first half of his. He just take a little chip off and just like taste it and you smell it and like that. You know? So Parijata flower, we can appreciate by that, well, what a wonderful thing it must have been. You know, adjusting all the prana in the palace, and you know, certain things stimulate thinking, certain things stimulate different things, and maybe it had different reaction to different seasons. So it would produce different fragrances according to different seasons, times of days. You know. So this was like quite a wonderful thing. And Satyabhama said that she wouldn't mind having one in her palace. You know. Of course, that's the whole thing, is that as soon as you start talking about Satyabhama, we're falling right into like something way beyond, like, you're not the body. We're conducted by three modes of material nature. And devotees have to distinguish Kanis, Dhammaja, Uttamadhikari devotees, you know. We're getting already now into such an advanced level of consciousness, no? More than Mahavishnu, more than Vaikuntha, more than Ayodhya, more than Shankarsham, you know, Sweta Dweep. You know. And finally, yeah, we're coming to Dwarka, which is not as intense as Mathura, which is not as intense as Vrindavan, like that. You know? And so I don't know what to say exactly. You know, some of the pastimes, of course, here, Prabhupada talks about them a little bit. Again, I think in the Krishna book, a few more. And, of course, there's a whole story of the Shamtaka jewel, and then how Maharishi Trajit delivered Satyabhama. And then when he was killed by Sharadanva, she took action. You know, she's a Kshatriya girl. She put his body in a tank of oil to preserve it so Krishna could see what a butchery it was. And she took off right away to see Krishna and Balaram in Hastinapur and brought them back like that. So her story is a little bit there. Then also in the, I think again, in the Krishna meets the queens of, it was Draupadi? They meet the queens in Kurukshetra like that. There's also a description there. And then Lalita Madhava has a whole description, of course, of Krishna's pastimes and activities in Dwarka, like that. Yeah? Very interesting, detailed. And also I was looking up then in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. It's my little bit of research there. And there, I remember, it's talking about how Krishna, you can see how Krishna, his humors are not, what's the word, like, stable, you know. He can go from one bhava to another. They relate, they combine together like a feast. And so when he's in Dwarka, of course, he's always kind of thinking about Vrindavan, you know. And of course, his humor is that, yes, you know, the Dwarka Vasi, Devaki, they're all like my biological family. Somebody might say my real family, you know. But, you know, the Brijbasis, they love me even more than that. And it's kind of amazing because I wasn't their child, you know. Of course, they didn't know it, but something else too, like that. But in any case, I can't remember. I can't, you know, I haven't experienced that kind of like love that's here, you know. And so at one point, Krishna was like, you know, when he got into some kind of something, it stimulated him to the point where he couldn't keep up his like Vasudev activities. He was feeling tremendous separation from everybody in Vrindavan, from his childhood. You can imagine when you grow up someplace and you could go back and see it again, it brings back such memories of playing and with your friends like that, you know. Yeah. And so he was lying under his covers, and then Brahma wanted to create an artificial Vrindavan to bring Krishna out into the ordinary consciousness, and then maybe they could bring him back to this, his Vasudev Bhava again. So at some point there was something like an argument going on about what was the real situation there. And I think Rohini was saying, well, you know, all these wonderful things were happening, but now because you're all so nice, he's forgotten about those things, and doesn't think about them much anymore, so don't worry about that. And so maybe she knew something else, but she was saying that. And then Rukmini became so disturbed by that, she said, you don't really know Krishna. So the purport explains that Rukmini is always on Krishna's chest and in his heart, so she knows what he feels like. She's maybe the one queen which doesn't have so much feeling of rivalry with her competition with her fellow co-wives with Krishna. Very unusual. Yeah. And so she was talking about how at night Krishna would start talking about different queens and princesses, and sometimes he would mistake them, the queens, for in his dreams for his girlfriends, and they were all like, you know, had tremendous intense mixed feelings. They were suffering because Krishna was feeling suffering and separation, but also they were feeling like, you know, competition, you know, with the other girls, you know, like that. And so it went on like that. And Satyabhama said something, got a competitive remark. Then later on it goes on that actually they get Krishna to, you know, pretend he's Pillies in Vrindavan, and then Krishna's expressing all these things in the gardens. And at some point, actually, Krishna expresses, you know, openly expresses the feelings of Vrindavan. And the queens are so overwhelmed that they go mad. Even Krishna's grandmother starts manifesting intense conjugal feelings, and then Satyabhama loses control. Ordinarily, they're cultured ladies. They don't show those things in public. You know? They just completely lost their minds, went mad when they saw the love and affection that the gopis had for Krishna. So what's her name? Kalindi, Jamuna. She's the only queen who's actually a gopi in Vrindavan also. You know? So it says that somehow or other she kind of expected this and was a little bit ready for it. So when it happened, she was able to keep enough control to grab. I think she grabbed Satyabhama and would have grabbed Krishna's grandmother and kept them from, you know, chasing Krishna like that, and kind of calmed everybody down like that. You know. But and then the different things going on, and all the rest of the queens became very impressed and thinking how wonderful this was. Somebody was still saying we should be in competition with these girls, and this is not right. But then it was Devaki was going on talking about how, no, this is perfectly correct. That my husband and I did austerities to get Krishna as our child, but the Brijbasis, Yashoda and Nanda, they only did austerities to serve Krishna. So maybe there's still some kind of like feeling of personal satisfaction in the austerities of the people of Dwarka. And Rukmini was talking about how they were just absorbed in their formalities, their rituals, and their service, and their activities. And so much of the things they were doing were tinged with like this formality and stuff like that, you know, for certain reasons like that. So of course, this is a very subtle analysis that all the acharyas go through, our acharyas, to show the difference in the bhava between the Dwarkavasis and the Vrijavasis, you know, but Rukmini, I mean, Devaki was talking about this and defending. I think again it was Krishna's grandmother, Rukrasena's wife, who plays kind of like this negative role there, criticizing, and she was saying, no, it's totally justified that Krishna has more love for them than for us, you know, because their position is so exalted like that. You know? It's so funny. Everybody was kind of disagreement, but then Satyabhama didn't come. She was, you know, went away in her mood of jealous anger and competition. So then Krishna was chastising her in front of everybody and told him to tell her to come like that. So she heard Krishna was calling her, and she took her bath and dressed, came like that. But she was trembling with terror like that. So she was hiding out behind the column, terrified like that. But I'm pretty sure she has an individual fragrance that her body generates. And so Krishna could tell she was there, and he called her, and he started like, you know, oh, something about proud queen or something, you know. And I think there's some indication that she actually understood all of this, and she actually was doing this just to stimulate Krishna's, you know, feelings of affection for the Brijbasis, and giving him a chance to glorify them in a really intense fashion like that. You know. So he was explaining, Chris was explaining that, you know, that I can't, I just, I wanted to like have the same kind of feelings I had there with all of you here, but I just couldn't do it. I couldn't play my flute or anything else. And all of you have your proud formalities and your honor of being in your position and those kind of things like that. Yeah. So, and then the problem was that Krishna was about to start to go back into his Vrindavan Bhava because he was, being so quick, glorifying it. So then Uddhava could figure all this out. So he went over and he had what happened. He had the, told the queens, he indicated with his head what's going on. So they all ran at his, Krishna's feet and were, you know, crying in ecstasy or something about how merciful he was and everything else. And they were so, and they appreciated the Brijbasis and please don't leave us. So Krishna became a little pacified. Uddhava had Devaki bring lunch very quickly and Balaram do something. And so finally Krishna was able to stabilize his Vasudeva consciousness like that. So it's very interesting. You know, in some ways I always think, well, maybe Krishna wants to just depopulate the whole universe and have nothing but Vrindavan. And you think, well, maybe he wants to depopulate all of Vrindavan and nothing but the Ras Lila. He wants to abandon all the gopis and just be with Radharani. So in some ways, that's true, and it goes on, and then, you know, Radha and Krishna are just staring at each other without any concern for anybody else forever. Another time I've heard Prabhupada said, all there is a little child playing with his fingers, finger games. And that's all that's happening, is Krishna is just playing with his fingers, putting them in different ways, different living entities are these, you know, parts and parcels. Yeah. So it's just trying to appreciate the spiritual world, you know. But of course, it also too described that sometimes Radha and Krishna, they love to play, you know, Ram Lila. So maybe Radharani becomes Sita and Sridham becomes Ravana and the cowherd boys become monkeys and, you know, some of her friends become Rakshasis and they hide her and Krishna can't find her and she wants to go back and play with Krishna, but Sridham won't let her. Ha ha ha, I'm Ravana, I've captured you. Oh, you know. So they go on and it's just so much fun, they never want to stop. And so then it becomes an eternal lila, and some people are eternally involved in that particular service like that. You know? So just because you're in Ram Lila doesn't mean you can't appreciate, you know, Krishna's pastimes. I mentioned before, it became a big controversy here because Rupa Maharaj was mentioning about how that Kshira Gopinath was carved by Ram and then worshipped by Sita. When she asked him about his form in the future, when he saw some cowherd boys, Ram saw some cowherd boys and was smiling. And Sita Devi asked, what are you smiling at? And she told him, in the future, I'll be a cowherd boy. And so she said, what form is that? So he carved the form of an arrow. And the next day, she worshipped it like that. And so it became an installed deity like that. So there's a controversy about how these pastimes occur, where they occur. But that's the idea. There's no limit. You know, Hanuman doesn't have to give up being Hanuman to enhance his service with the finest, you know, higher ideals like that, and how it all works together, you know, unlimited. You know. So that's kind of some of the ideas, the understanding I had about, you know, Satyabhama, a little bit. Of course, in Vidagdha Madhava, you know, somebody else knows better than I do also, it's describing that all the gopis are disappearing in Vrindavan, they appear to have drowned themselves in the river, their footprints go into the river, and the sun is shining, Radharani disappears, Chandravali. And then gradually it's revealed that they've all taken birth or something or appeared as, you know, the different queens in Dwarka. And Satyabhama is Radharani, and she comes from the sun god. He's describing that Maharaj Satyatrajit got two jewels from the sun god. Samtaka jewel and also Satyabhama, with that two gifts. So when Radharani did disappear into the shining water of the Jamuna, she went up into the abode of the sun god, and he then delivered her to Maharaj Satrajit, so she could be united with Krishna. And then Chandravali becomes Rukmini and Jambavati, and they're all there in terms of the different friends and associates like that. You know? But they're trying to figure out who they are, what's going on. So the story is that, you know, Krishna wins Satyabhama, and so Maharaj Satyajit is going to send her, I guess Krishna hasn't seen her yet. Of course, being a young girl like that, she's always been very covered. Nobody's seen her in her palace. And so she's going to arrive in Dwarka. And then all of Rukmini's friends are like, you know, hanging out the window and trying to see who is this new girl who's come like that. And who is this new queen come here? And all very young, you know. Like that. And so then Satyabhama goes to her quarters and her friends and they set up her things and her teddy bear or something. Then Rukmini's friends come, they start talking to her and they say, well, sister, we're so happy to see you here and we have to go back now to our princess. And as soon as they're out, they say, she has to go. She can't even stay one day. Yeah. Rukmini hasn't got a chance against her. Forget it. You know? So this is the intrigue. And so then Satyabhama goes for a little walk in her new palace and Krishna's going for a walk in the garden. And they see each other. And then Krishna says, well, who are you? And she says, well, I'm the daughter of Mara Satrajit. And he says, well, I'm Krishna. Oh, really? Do you like peppermint ice cream? Oh, I love peppermint ice cream. It's my favorite. Oh, really? So this whole thing starts going on, like meeting each other. And then Satyabhama says something like, oh, you know, but how can there be any place in your heart for me? You're already married to Rukmini. And then Krishna says something like, no, you're like the most wonderful girl and nobody can compete with you and on like that. So then Rukmini walks in with her friends and she sees them there, standing there, and she looks at them. And then Krishna and Satyabhama do a quick 180-degree turn, facing the opposite directions, looking at the flowers. And Rukmini walks over to Krishna and says, oh, I see you've met Satyabhama. And Krishna says, oh, you're Satyabhama. How nice to meet you. Welcome to Dwarka. Now, of course, Satyabhama is upset because he's been avowing his love for her. And, you know, and so she's angry and Rukmini is suspicious. And then, somebody else is there. The grandmother is there, wondering what's going on between these young people. So then Krishna says one verse, which can be interpreted by Satyabhama as amongst the moon, amongst the stars, you are the moon. And Rukmini can also take it as she is the moon amongst the stars. And the grandmother can take it as, oh, it's going to be a full moon night tonight. Guess we can't see the stars. Like that. So Krishna's figuring out how to keep all of them pacified. Yeah. But then unfortunately, there was one parrot there. And he heard all the conversation with Satyabhama and Krishna. So being a good iPod, he starts to repeat everything he heard. And then, you know, Rukmini starts to hear this. Oh, my goodness, you know. And so then Krishna grabs the parrot and is trying to shut him up, you know, stroking his head, whatever. And then Rukmini takes him very gently from Krishna's hands and starts feeding him grapes and saying, now, what is it you heard? Oh. And Krishna's making all these protestations of love and everything else. And Rukmini runs away crying and Krishna wants to run after her. And then Satyabhama's looking at him. Yes, I know you love her more than me. And my God. So in the end, Satyabhama is supposed to be sent away. And so she can't tolerate this. Not because she wants to enjoy, because she wants to serve. It's like you finally met the person you're supposed to serve. You finally find the shelter that you always wanted in your life, you know? And that is it. So intense. So she's going to drown herself, you know? This is about this moment, I think somebody comes out of the sky, like Purnamasi or something, and starts like making it all figured out. Okay, Satyabhama is actually incarnation of Radharani. Chandravali is actually incarnation of Chandravali, and so-and-so, and so-and-so, and Jambavati is, you know, Jamuna, and oh, yeah. Everybody's there like that, so on. So at that point, Satyabhama and Rukmini are so happy to find each other because they're cousins. They love each other like anything. So they love each other so much. You know? So they're so happy to find each other and they're embracing. And then Rukmini says, well, of course you have to marry Krishna. How can any other arrangement be made like that? But please, you've got to share him with us a little bit, you know. And Satyabhama says, no, he belongs to you and it's you who have to share him with me. But they can't find somebody like Vishakha is still missing, you know. So Jambavati comes marching down the path or something, and they all figure out or something. Oh, hey, you're Vishakha. Oh, okay, Haribol. So it's a comedy like that. You know? And of course, all the great expertise and abilities of Rupa Goswami to make us to appreciate these things a little bit like that, and how this is what pleases Krishna, you know, so on. So the whole point is, again, is that even when the cowherd boys, I know it says there, when they wanted the tall fruits in Talban, they were telling Krishna about how Dinukasura was hoarding them and stuff, and they would really like to taste them. So it says actually they didn't want to taste them. You know, what they wanted was that Krishna and Balaram would taste them. But they knew if they asked Krishna and Balaram to take them for themselves, they would say, no, let's not bother this guy. You know? But they said they wanted them, then Krishna and Balaram would get them. You know? So same way, the whole idea of all these things is a service attitude. And so they're serving Krishna, you know, to get benedictions, but they use them to get things which will only increase, you know, the beauty and sensitivity of their loving affairs. Yeah. Of course, there is some comparison between the queens in Dwarka and the Vrijavasis. But at the same time, too, Krishna appreciates everything, everybody's service like that, and so on. That's kind of all I had to say. You know, my ideas or comments. If anybody else has any comments or questions or pastimes or clarifications.
Well, that was a lot to say. That was so nice.
Ah, you want to go to Dwarka?
I don't know. I have to become a liberated soul to know what I really want.
Yeah. Some of these things are dangerous too, because the bhavas are so intense that you get caught up in these things. When Gopakumar was in Vaikuntha, he was supposed to go on, but he was so happy being in Vaikuntha that Vishnu had to disappear for some time so he could, you know, get freed enough from it to go on, to continue on like that.
Yeah. Does anyone have a question or a comment?
Mm-hmm. Only comment, yeah, is one heck of a pot of nectar.
My goodness.
Thank you.
So, Maharaj, you like Desire Tree. I was wishing you would say something from Vidagdha and Lalita Madhu, and you did. Now I wish that you would do the whole seminar someday again, because I heard it from Dallas, but this is so nectarian. You've done the Lalita and Vidagdha Madhu seminar.
They're available. I mean, I got copies from somebody.
No, I think they're there on Dallas website.
No, I mean the actual translations by somebody.
But yeah, it's nectarian when we hear from,
yeah,
you, that.
And also, I hear too, the translators say is, I think it took Rupa Goswami like 17 years or something, the time he started writing and when he finished or something.
Wow.
He's a gopi and everything else. And so, you know, it loses something in the translation. Yeah. Like there are jokes in Spanish that are completely, have no humor whatsoever when you translate them into English. They have no meaning, you know. It's the same way, though. I'm sure the Vidagdha Madhava, like the Madhava, I've seen that. It's just the author will say, this is funny because in Sanskrit this is like this and that, and this can mean this and that, you know? And so on. So there's so much, we can see there's so much more ahead of us. Yeah. But right now, you know, for many people, it's just you're getting free from these vicious habits that we have, all are caught up in the West. Yeah. And actually subtle habits, you know, like that. You know, mental speculation, you know, enjoying these things, thinking. Wow. Yeah. But then again, of course, the whole point is the devotional service is the best way. Shraddha Shabda Vishvas Kahe Sudhadvai Nishchoy Krishna Bhakti Koili Sarva Karma Kritahoy. But faith means the strong determination that just by serving Krishna, everything else will automatically be accomplished.
There, it's a new thing. It started January, and there was all kinds of...
Okay. So, yeah. So, I guess kind of one of the main principal points here is that Yudhishthira Maharaj is pointing this out, but they didn't have to do anything special. They didn't have to win big battles. They didn't have to do so many things. It's just whatever Krishna wanted. actually with Jayananda, we had that same kind of consciousness that many people wanted to be leader of this project, or they wanted to be a scholar, or they wanted to be a cook, or again, something that may be gratifying to identify their ego in terms of like something, you know. But Jayananda's whole thing was just always be engaged, always do a little service, you know, always have some service, you know. Not so important exactly what it is, but always doing some service, you know. And then Krishna will figure out how to engage you properly and stuff like that. So he was very much always an association preaching, just be a devotee. You know, if you can't do a certain service, don't become, what's the word, like despondent or angry, you know. No, just find something to do all the time like that, you know, for Krishna, for Prabhupada, you know. And again, it doesn't have to be a big thing. If you just, it's a whole thing, is just that we're trying to do it for Krishna, for Prabhupada. And then, my goodness, you know, I got to kind of learn this myself, you know. And then everything will be okay. You know, devotional service is so incredible like that.
Maharaj, if nobody else has a question, I have. Could you elaborate on what you were saying about, you know, one time Prabhupada said that there's nothing but Krishna playing with his fingers? I mean, there's a similar description about when Markandeya Rishi went into deep meditation, and then he saw that, you know, the whole universe was within Krishna, who was just sucking on his toe on a banyan leaf. Can you elaborate what you were saying?
Basically, that's it. Just that, yeah, this is little children and stuff. They do play finger games and different things like that, and they make sounds. No, little children, of course, they drive you mad with like get some sound going. You know, they'll just go over again and again like that and stuff, just enjoying like making that sound and stuff. You know, yeah. So same way, yeah. It's the 11th canto, isn't it? I think that it's describing how Markandeya Rishi, he was alive during, I guess it was the night of Brahma. One night of Brahma, he was suffering like anything, austerities. He saw an island, he saw Krishna. And it's interesting because he didn't see Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. He saw, you know, Krishna. Yeah? And like you're saying, you know, because it's simultaneously we're not the same as Krishna. You know, we have free will. When we think of somebody's toe, we got maybe a person sucking on his toe, okay, the toe is somebody's kind of like a dead object. But it's not. It can also move, I guess, or something like that. Interesting. You know? So, you know, but we have free will, and so we're especially interesting. You know, the fingers. You know, we're especially very interesting fingers. You know, so that's all I understand is that just that, you know, all there is Krishna with himself from one point of view, and it is all one. You know? But on the other hand, no, it's not one. There is this is very. In some ways, it's more, the variety is more, what's the word, more appropriate to understand the variety than it is to understand the oneness, like that, the variegatedness, and that we are different. And then, as Satyabhama and Radharani are different or something, you know, there are differences like that. You know? But, actually, one nice analogy is it says that, one place in the Bhagavatam, it says, one should meditate upon the different limbs of Vishnu, not forgetting the whole body. Another place it says one should meditate upon the body of Vishnu, not forgetting that it's composed of limbs. Yeah. So, how to do this? Achinta beta beta tattva. It's faster than speculation. As soon as you start to make sure Krishna's hands are comfortable, you know, then automatically you're thinking about his whole body. Yeah, they're connected like that. So, you know, or you think about his whole body, then you think automatically about the individual parts, how they're comfortable. You know? Yeah. So that's all I know.
Maharaj.
Yes.
Gandhari, go ahead.
She lost her.
Sorry. Oh. Muted. You know, air condition in Satyabhama's palace, so just reminded me of, you know, we would speculate or we won't understand, but actually we went to Jaipur and Udhampur and you see how those palaces were using the system where they would have air condition. I don't know if anybody else has been, but they have these little droplets or holes along an extra extension of some kind of beam or wall. Then, you know, they would see the water go by. There'd be little tiny pipes, see-through pipes, tubes of water going by. Then the air, if there is any air that would come, then that would create air condition. So it's
There's so many systems like that. And of course, also this is Prabhupada's almost implying that the jewels have something to do with it. The jewels have some kind of effect like that. Because actually, I've been doing like a little bit of reading of Middle Eastern history. There's this whole Assyria, always in the Britannica, you get all these kings. Interesting, because one of them is the name Asuribanipal. It's kind of like, you know, the Asura who was a friend of Maharaj Banasura. And this is like 2000 BC. You know? And again, just reading this, is this whole evolutionary idea, more they're doing archaeology and so on, is really becoming less tenable. Because there were so many groups in the Middle East, in the Hebrew, the Hebrews were just one group, you know. And they had all their different kinds of religious ideas, sun god, moon god. And of course, it's a long time ago, but they found the whole libraries of, you know, thousands of clay tablets, which are written in quite understandable language, you know. Big, you know, palaces of 400 rooms. You know? So that, and then the tablets include so much information about different kinds of things. Like, we have mystical powers with electricity. We've developed that. But electricity was originally somebody discovered lodestones. And lodestone, if you put it on some kind of piece of wood that would float in water, it would orient itself towards north-south. It would magnetic. You know? And then from that, just one thing after another with static electricity and other things, and people started developing different kinds of electricity. And then the metallurgy developed where they could pull wire. And just, you develop one tiny aspect of the unlimited mysteries of material nature. You know, but before, other people had different kinds of abilities to do mysterious things, to accomplish certain goals like that. So, you know, more and more, the Dwarka and all these things were happening during the Dwapara Yuga. And so everything was much more subtle then. One devotee, Ajata Saptu, he was an architect, and he was saying, he was trying to think of how Krishna, because they had all these skyscraper palaces, they must have some kind of system of elevators. Because it wasn't, you know, Krishna and the queens were walking up and down five stories. I forgot my hat, you know. So you would wonder if they were like flower airplane elevators, or, you know, stairways that gave you what we call super legs or something. Yeah. So many mystical powers, and even now, so many subtle things we can do, you know, to create a nice environment. You know, to, the best use of a bad bargain. You know, that's the whole thing here. Best use of a bad bargain. Yeah.
It's interesting you mentioning about Middle East, because there is one Purana. You know, it's just like a summary of Puranas, of what's in each Purana. And it mentions that they, of course, followed Varnashram, and they, of course, worshipped the sun god, the Middle Eastern. So they were strict followers of Varnashram. But I find that, because through Ayurveda, I find that Middle Eastern people, especially Iran, they have this very fine, still authentic, what you call, exotic items in their diet, especially the saffron, cardamom, rose, all those authentic, exotic things that are very close to spirituality, even now, and less so in the Vedic culture, among Indians, is so much decreasing very fast. I don't know if you are aware of where these things are used in Indian subcontinent, but it's very current in the Iranian culture still.
Trayarishi from Iran, he told us, I think it was the Shah of Iran, picked that name or something. It comes from Aryan. But even back in the historians, even though they identify certain groups, call themselves Arya. Yeah? So there was a lot of fluid connection between the Middle East and the Far East. You know, Gandhari was supposed to come from Afghanistan. One world. We've been having very nice, we're still in Tennessee. It's very nice to get an association with all of your good selves. We've been here since December 12th. We'll be here until December 20th, January 25th. And we're just trying to settle down one place, you know, and just dig in and preach with some depth. So we've been organizing programs in the Tagore Sundar Prabhu and the devotees here for several years. We have our nonprofit educational corporation. And I'm not a very great preacher, but we're always just trying to like do something. And eventually, we've met some nice professors at the campus. The campus here is Vanderbilt's up in Nashville. It's a very powerful school and it's internationally. It's kind of in some ways out of our league. But right here in where we are in Murfreesboro, it's about 40 minutes south of Nashville, it's Middle Tennessee State University, and they have 30,000 students. And the focus is on education, which is very nice. And we've been trying to get on the campus different ways. And finally, we met some professors, and slowly, they like our attitude, what we're doing. They understand what we're doing. It matches a lot of things they're trying to do. And so it looks like next year, one program a year, annual event. So next in September, it looks like for sure we're going to be able to be on the campus. And the program sponsored by the Department of Philosophy. And a lot of these things, what I learned about the Sankirtan like this was from Sup Damodar Maharaj. You know, Prabhupada was preaching. You know, I told him how to preach in these different environments. You know? And one time he asked about having a laboratory for doing experiments for establishing Vedic culture. And Prabhupada said, no, it's not necessary. They've already done so much. He said, if you want to, if it's practical, okay. But he said, you don't have to because they already have so much knowledge. You know? And all you have to do is sharpen your intelligence on Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and then show them how to put it all together in the right way. You know? So that's because all Bhagavatam, everything else, it has all this depth of archaeology, history, all these things. You know? And we think it's mythology, but research has never known it's not mythology, and there are different remnants being passed down. Just like we're interested in these things. So the great kings and so on, we're also interested in these things. And so we find in archaeology in these areas is still. It's gonna more we investigate, the more it supports our philosophy and science the same way. But here, of course, it's all talking about, you know, Dwarka and the remains and remnants like that. You know? So any final comments?
That was a great class, Maharaj.
Sachabama ki jai.
Hey.
Rukmini ki jai.
Hanuman Prasad Swami ki jai.
Jai. Okay.
Krishna, so, here's the link for the electricity in Egyptian pyramids.
Oh, electricity! Oh my God, the pyramids! Oh,
yeah, they have electricity. Yeah. So here's the link. It's the YouTube.
Yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj. Oh.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll get free electricity now. Pyramids over our houses out of 150-ton blocks of stones. That's all you need to do is build a pyramid out of 150-ton blocks of stones. 15,000 blocks, you can have free electricity. Okay. Harinam Sankirtan ki jai.
Jai.
Thank you all very much.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you.